listening to an episode of the Dynasty Draft Room podcast, brought to you by DynastyDraftRoom.com.
Welcome back inside of the Dynasty Draft Room. It is a great day to talk Dynasty Fantasy Football. My name is Matt Hicks, the FF underscore educator, joined tonight by just Ryan Searfoss at Foss534. But Ryan, it is never just Ryan. I'm just
Eric, I miss you.
This is gonna be a problem.
What made Eric get attached? Yeah. But so it's not bad.
I'm just out here listening to your Derrick Henry hype before this podcast episode. We're talking about trades that are flooding our inbox. It's a wild time to be playing fantasy football, man. A wild week two, and it seems like everybody is just absolutely panicking heading into week three. But we're not, Ryan. We're not panicking. We're ready to sit back, look at the situations a little bit, and listen, we talk rookies all offseason. We hype up rookies. We go through the draft process. You know, we focus on that. We watch all the tape. And then some people, the season starts, and they just forget about the rookies. Well, we're not forgetting about the rookies. We're doing a little rookie check-in here, talking about a dozen of the rookies that have either stood out or not stood out so far this season, checking in here and just getting a little temperature gauge on how things are going. So, man, I'm always down to talk rookies. I'm ready to do it. How are you feeling?
Great. It's always rookie season year-round. When they're not rookies no more, we got new ones.
The grind never stops. The grind, it never stops, Ryan. 365. Well, hey, before we jump into the rookies, which will really be the bulk of this episode, I got a question for you. I think it's an important question, all right? So week two, it hurt a lot of rosters. I just talked about it. We had so many trades, or so many injuries, I should say, coming down. And now as a result here, we're recording on Tuesday night. Our inboxes are flooded with trades. Either people are trying to sell right now, they're trying to buy. How early for you is too early to pivot on a season? I'm genuinely curious if week two is normally too early for you and if it's any different this year with all these injuries.
It's maybe too early, but the thing is, if you're playing year-round and you have a gauge on your players, you know if your roster's built for that. Like, I can look at my team and tell you if I'm one or two pieces away where I think I contend this year, where I'm either have to make moves to get better or I'm trying to build for the future. I think you have a slight idea. Like, if I'm rolling with some of these rookies as my top players on the team right now, I might try to push it one more year and just load up on talent and get rid of some of my vets. But I don't think it is too early because you should know what you got or at least have some idea.
For me, right, like I actually have a few squads that I expected at this point would be 2-0 or even at least be split 1-1. And I'm even in a couple doubleheader leagues, Ryan, where I like my squad, but I'm 0-4. And so for me, what I always try to do a couple things. Look at your roster. Look at who you've played so far. Look at your points against and size up your opponent's rosters. You know what I mean? Like, take an honest look at your team. But in 9 out of 10 situations, I'm not panicking right now in week two. I try to take the macro approach, pull myself out, right, and say, all right, if I was on a 2-game losing streak in the middle of the season with this roster, would I be freaking out the same way? Probably not. Almost every dynasty team can sustain a 2-week losing streak and still be fine and even still have a couple other losses and slide into the playoffs. So unless you had Saquon Barkley, Cortland Sutton, Paris Campbell, Drew Lock, even Drew Lock that was coming back in a couple weeks, unless you have like a solid quarter or more of your team that's on season-ending IR, I just don't think it's the time to panic in week two.
No, but if you're already kind of rebuilding going into the season and you know your team's not there yet, is kind of what I was leaning towards. Is your dynasty draft room dynasty league one of the ones you're going to look at as a rebuild?
That team's not that bad.
No, you have McCaffrey, Nick Chubb, and like you have veteran talent on So yeah. No.
And I think one thing, Ryan, we have to keep in mind and where we get in trouble in dynasty leagues, right? If you're playing in a dynasty league, you're playing a long-term game. And long-term games require long-term solutions, all right? They don't require short-term. Don't panic. Like, I'm telling all the Christian McCaffrey owners, you know, I've gotten some decent offers for Christian McCaffrey in the leagues I have him. It's 4 to 6 weeks. It's 4 to 6. Are you giving up the number one overall dynasty player in a non-Superflex format for 4 to 6 weeks?
No, I'm not doing it for Barkley either. That's a year.
Right. Well, I don't know. I feel kind of different about Barkley just because he was struggling in that Giants offense as it is. That organization is most likely, fingers crossed, going through a front office overhaul, could potentially have a new starting quarterback next year. The offensive line, I just don't know that they're going to have the money to invest in him long term. There's a lot of question marks with that scheme and that offense. So even when Barkley's healthy, man, it's been a struggle.
Yeah. The disrespect to Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones is not good. He was never good. All we've learned over the last couple weeks is that he's even less good. I can't talk about Daniel Jones anymore. You ready to talk about the rookies? Can we please talk about rookies right now?
Hell yes.
All right, here we go.
Hot or hot garbage? Oh, I
love trash. All right, this is the hot or hot garbage segment here, Ryan. I will say for the most part, we're probably not going to be calling anybody really hot garbage at this point, but there is a lot of hype and a lot of reaction to what we've seen from some of these rookies so far. And then some other guys I think aren't getting as much hype as they maybe should be. So we're going to kind of toss it around here. We're going to talk quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers. And we're just going to talk, honestly, the box score, sure. But we're going to talk about what we've seen with our eyes so far, if it backs up our film review at this point, or if we're worried a little bit about the situation they're in, their usage, overall scheme fit, all those good things, man. Let's go ahead. Let's start with the quarterback position here, Ryan. Let's start with the number one overall pick, Joe Burrow. We got to see him on primetime Thursday night football last week. This man threw the ball. All right, there is passing volume in Cincinnati. What did you see from Joe Burrow? Were you encouraged? Were there red flags? Tell me what you saw.
Man, I was more impressed than I even thought I was going to be. He looked great. They trusted him to throw the ball 61 times last week.
61 times. He's thrown the ball 97 times through 2 weeks.
He has looked phenomenal. He's making hard throws. He's throwing on the run. He's not afraid to move the ball to his feet, get out of the field to his feet a little bit. He's been accurate. He's spread the ball around. It's only positive signs for Joe Burrow. Yes, they're 0-2 through, but he's been in two games on a team that obviously, it's bad enough to have number one overall pick being thrown in there. I'm so positive about it. In our projection series, I said 4,000 yards. I feel even better about it today than I did then.
I bet you do because, I mean,
he threw the ball 60 times.
He threw the ball 60 times. He has 500 yards, 509 yards through two games. I'm no mathematician, Ryan, but I think he's going to hit that.
Yeah, that team has to throw because it's terrible on defense.
Right.
He's going to get a trial by fire this year, and I'm all for watching it.
And as far as his touchdown-interception ratio, 3-1 so far, his ball placement was very good on Thursday night in week two against Cleveland. He had great ball placement. He placed it well along the boundary, which is what we wanted to see. He had some drops.
Yeah. That throw he had to Tyler Boyd when he scrambled to the right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You can't draw that up any prettier. He kept him in bounds. It was phenomenal.
So,
watch.
Yeah, we like what we're seeing from the scheme. I like what we're seeing from his weapons. I got to say, T. Higgins has impressed. You know, we're not talking about let's talk about T. Higgins while we're talking about Joe Burrow. For me, in week two, T. Higgins was what we wanted him to be. I believe he saw a 60% snap share. And I got to tell you, A.J. Green, man, he's not looking too green. He's looking a little rusty out there. And so it seems like T. Higgins has a role even with A.J. Green out there on the field, but I think the role's only going to go up here for T. Higgins.
Yeah, I really, really like T. Higgins' snapshot. I like that he was getting action, he's getting thrown to. A.J. Green had a really tough matchup. I didn't know we were jumping there first. I was actually going to bring that up with seeing it. He got shadowed by Greg Ward or Denzel Ward almost the whole game.
Ward, yeah, yeah.
And he's top tier, so that makes a difference with him. But the fact that T. Higgins stepped up like that and looked good, it's very positive. He's going to have a huge role in that offense. It might be still later rather than sooner, but it's there.
I absolutely agree. And I think we're seeing the usage early. When we're talking about both Higgins and Joe Burrow, I think it's overall, it's a positive connection. I'm excited about both of these guys. I think Higgins was somebody we were getting too cheap this offseason anyways. And Joe Burrow has proved it. He's looked like a veteran. His drive in week one to finish the game against the Chargers, they should have won that game. You know, that was bang, bang right at the end. It was veteran poise. I even saw him doing it against Cleveland. He can manage that offense better than I've seen a lot of veteran quarterbacks manage their offense in the two-minute drill. And that's the kind of thing. Like, that's difference-making talent. You know what I mean? Like, that is next-level star potential in the NFL.
He has everything we want in a star. And just kind of circling back to T. Higgins, the one other point, we were talking with taking A.J. Green's role eventually. Tyler Boyd's who Tyler Boyd is. Like, he's Robin. Like, T. Higgins has that number one wide receiver. And coming in, working with Burrow from this point on, I think that's good for them long-term. And he could be their number one receiver. And we should make strong, strong dynasty offers like it.
All right. Well, let's transition a little bit here, Ryan. And let's talk about another quarterback, rookie quarterback here. And it was not supposed to be one that we were supposed to see this early in the season. But in week two, just before the game, Tyrod Taylor was a late scratch. And Justin Herbert took over. And Justin Herbert against the Kansas City Chiefs took over. 22 of 33, 311 yards, one touchdown, one interception, one rushing touchdown. I believe it was his first drive. It was his first or second drive of his career. He goes down there, runs the ball into the goal line. I love what I saw from Justin Herbert week one. We were consistently telling people not to buy into the fake Justin Herbert. Not even hype. What's the opposite of hype? Hate? I mean, the Justin Herbert hate that was based on a few people who only watch primetime football games live and didn't like the way that he played in one game against Auburn on primetime and wouldn't dig into the rest of his tape, really pushed Justin Herbert down rookie boards. And people who took him in the early second round or late first round of Superflex leagues, I think, are really excited right now with what they saw from Justin Herbert in week two.
Yeah, I'm one of those. I had him in second round of a 16-team league.
Ridiculous.
And I'm pumped to have him on my team. He looked like he was playing up to the skill set that everybody hyped during draft season. That strong arm, he made great throws, athletic. If he puts that all together – with the right coaching, Anthony Lynn, I hope you do right by Malik Men there. But if he puts that together, he's a dynamic passer. And he was just in the wrong draft class where he got passed that looked over with talents like Burrow and Tua, because he's as talented of quarterbacks we've seen come out in a while. I love the skill set. And he's another one. He needs to stay in the rest of this year.
I completely agree. All right, Ryan, let's jump over. Well, I should – okay, so one more quarterback that I just want to quickly touch on. We haven't seen him yet. Of course, Tua Tagovailoa. Tua watches on there in Miami. Obviously, Ryan Fitzpatrick is nothing special. We know that. But we talked about this before the season. Don't expect Tua to play for Miami until the matchups get a little bit easier, because the matchups have been hard at the beginning of the season, and there's no reason to rush your rookie into that. So I know Tua watches on. I'm still sitting on week 7 or 8 for him to come in. Maybe Miami gets impatient. Maybe they really like what they see from practice, and we see him closer to week 4 or 5. I don't think it has anything to do with Tua himself, though.
No, zero worries. It's just he's coming off injury. Let him come along. And it's not like Miami's playing for Super Bowl this year.
All right. Switching over to the running back position here. I feel like it was the tale of two running backs here with Clyde Edwards-Helaire between weeks 1 and 2. Week 1, boom, first game of the NFL season. Everybody's hype. he comes out and just absolutely shreds the Houston Texans, gets 25 attempts on the ground, 138 yards. He gets a touchdown, but he only gets two targets. Everyone panics, right? Thought he was supposed to be a pass catcher. Thought he was supposed to be a pass catcher. Week two, not prime time. He's got that 4 o'clock slot. Not as many people have their eyes on him. 10 attempts on the ground, just 38 yards, but he gets 8 targets, catches 6 of those. So even though he doesn't find the end zone, he ends up with 13 PPR points in week two. Where are you at with Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Do you like that we saw more balanced usage? Are you a little nervous that it seems like it's a weekly type dependency with him? Are you pretty confident with him moving forward?
I mean, I think when you look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's where you thought he was. If he was your RB1 for the rookies, leave him there. If he was 2 or 3, leave him there. Like, it's kind of what we expect. That offense is going to do what the game plan dictates. Week one, they had an awesome matchup for him, and he ran all over them. This week, they had to pass a little bit more. They're in a closer game where they wanted the ball in Mahomes' hands, and he showed that he could do it in the passing game. And that's what we want. Like, we want it where he has that floor, where he can do that in those matchups. I don't know how consistent his volume is going to be on either aspect on a week-to-week basis. Where we're like going to look at somebody like Jonathan Taylor, who we know is going to get his touches every week on the ground. I don't know if we can count on that with Helaire just because of the way that team's built.
Yeah, I mean, this is the interesting part, right? Through 2 weeks, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is running back 11 in PPR, 32.8 points. All right, Jonathan Taylor, running back 10, 33.9 points. So as much as we've debated back and forth on these two guys, at least through 2 weeks, they're essentially even in scoring.
However you felt, you were right.
Right.
Like, that's it with these two. They're who we thought they were. They're both studs. Don't overthink it. Jonathan Taylor got volume week two, and it's going to stay that way. And he looked damn good doing it.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm a Taylor guy. I'm going to stick with him as my top of those guys for now until I learn more. And if you like Helaire, I'm not going to fight you over it.
We saw in week two, if we're going to switch gears here and talk Jonathan Taylor a little bit more in detail, we saw in week two the ideal situation for Jonathan Taylor, right? Indianapolis gets up. They're in control of this game. They get up on Minnesota, and they have the ability to control the pace of the game. Of course, Marlon Mack is now out for the season. He's an unrestricted free agent heading into free agency. I think for the most part, right, we can kind of proceed assuming Marlon Mack is not really going to encroach on Jonathan Taylor's touches at any point moving forward. No. So week two, he gets 26 attempts, hits the 100-yard mark, 101 yards, and one touchdown. And he gets the two targets, catches both of them. Again, this was the flip-flop, right? He had 6 targets in week one when Marlon Mack was there for part of the game. Nyheim Hines was getting more carries. I think in week two we saw less Nyheim Hines in the red zone as well. I think that Jonathan Taylor is skyrocketing forward. You know, I have him as a running back one in one of my leagues, and I'm confident with that. You know, we just talked about panicking or not. I have an 0-2 team. I have Jonathan Taylor on the team. It's one of the reasons I'm not panicking, even despite having some injuries with Drew Lock and Cortland Sutton. I'm still trying to roll forward because this is a difference-making type player.
Yeah, he's somebody I'm locking in my top 10 for a long time. How, like, he's an absolute star in the league, and you should be comfortable with him as your RB1.
Let's talk about somebody, Ryan, that's kind of getting a little bit of victory lap action already. And I'm not really sure that we're in a position where we should be getting to the victory lap stage of it yet, just because I'm not sure that he's as exciting as we're kind of making him out to be right now. But the running back in Los Angeles here, Joshua Kelly, at least at this point, you know, through the first 2 weeks, he is getting high volume, which I understand why folks are excited. He's getting high volume, 35 touches, 23 touches on the ground here in week two, 12 carries in week one. He's playing a clear role in between the tackles that's kind of balancing out what Austin Ekeler is doing. I'm not sure moving forward, especially if Justin Herbert is the guy, that they're going to continue putting the ball on the ground this much. I think if you're a Joshua – now, for most of these guys, I'm not advocating you really move them around too much. I think if you are a Joshua Kelly person, now is probably the time to cash in on that hype for what you can get.
Yeah, his – I definitely cash in on that hype. It's high right now. Eckler has a clear role on that team. He's a better runner. He's a better receiving threat. Josh Kelly's cool at grinding in between the tackles, but that's not what we want in fantasy. We like it while it's happening for a couple weeks, and then you have your Jordan Howard effect where it's boring and you're not getting a ton of points. You're kind of like capped off the top, and he's extra capped because he's there with a back who proved he can do it. He looks like a less efficient version of Melvin Gordon, and that's really not saying much because Melvin Gordon wasn't either. So I'm selling on him. It's a great story. I'm happy for him, but fantasy-wise, that window's there. Get rid of him.
Talk about a total difference between week one and week two. J.K. Dobbins and the Baltimore Ravens offense. Now, in week one, Ryan, not only did Dobbins get his 7 attempts, which was just three, I believe it was 3 or 4 less than Mark Ingram, he got the red zone looks. He got 2 touchdowns. He made the most of his red zone looks in week one. Baltimore was playing in a super positive game script. Now, at least early on in week two, Houston was kind of keeping it close. And I don't believe J.K. Dobbins had a touch until either late in the first half or early in the second half, if I'm remembering correctly. I know in total, he only touched the ball 3 times in week two. Now, he went over 50 yards combined on those three touches. So he made the most out of them. But I think, you know, and we're both following the Ravens closely here. I think it's going to be a situation where you just cannot bank week in and week out on J.K. Dobbins being a part of this offense. Gus Edwards, I believe, outtouched him in week two. And that's something that Harbaugh is going to do at times.
Yeah, I mean, I love J.K. Dobbins' dynasty value long term. It's his job in the future. But right now, we said it before the year started. He's not going to have a feature role right away. Mark Ingram's a very good back. They trust Ingram. He's always going forward. He makes the right play. He can contribute in the passing game. And Gus Edwards is a nice between-tackle banger with him. You're going to see a few touches here or there for Dobbins to change of pace and to bring that speed and excitement in there. But this year, I'm not trusting on him. I'm excited because I didn't think he'd get this much production already. So he has some sort of value this season, but we're looking for the future for him.
Yeah, and he's somebody, right? If I am a rebuilding team, if I'm somebody who's hurt by these injuries, you know, I'm seeing if I can offer a few pieces, right? Even if they're like, so if I'm like, you know, for example, say my team is built around Barkley and Sutton as two of my top guys. And then I've put all of these veterans together that kind of have like a short term, you know, shelf life and are kind of popping off right now. You know, I got Chris Carson in there, you know, who's doing good. And, you know, you got some of these other short term guys, maybe package them together, maybe sell off Chris Carson and Leonard Fournette to get J.K. Dobbins. You know what I mean? Like if you can do something like that as this rebuilding team, that would be a good move to make, I think, at this point, because you're right. He's going to be the guy moving forward. But right now, they just don't need him to be the guy. Like, they don't.
Ingram's 30. He's not going to last forever there. Right. He has great knowledge. Gus Edwards is a complimentary back. Like, Dobbins has everything you want in a three-down runner. And Baltimore's going to run enough to sustain him. Just not yet.
Exactly.
Okay. Patience.
Ryan, a player that I think we were doing the victory laps before he ever touched an NFL football was Antonio Gibson here. And by we, I do not mean we. He's had an interesting kind of go of it these first 2 weeks. Not super involved in week one. I mean, he touched the ball 11 times, so not bad, but he didn't really necessarily have any, you know, consistently large runs or really bursts that got us excited in the way that we thought. Week two, he touches the ball 13 times on the ground, 55 yards. It's not bad. He does find the end zone this week, which was exciting. We got that highlight of him. But through 2 weeks, Ryan, just 4 targets. In games where Washington is playing either in a neutral or negative game script for the vast majority of the game. I mean, I think they were in a negative game script the entire time versus Arizona, and I think that they were in negative game script for at least three quarters against Philadelphia, if not neutral game script. And we're still not seeing a high target volume for Antonio Gibson. It's a little bit confusing with him right now.
Yeah, I mean, the signs are there, which is positive. That's good volume for the first two games where you know it's committee backfield and it's not a very good team. I don't understand why he's not involved in the passing game. Maybe it's a little bit of Dwayne Haskins in there. But I think it's a positive. I don't know if he is at his redraft height of a couple weeks ago where he was going like fifth, sixth round in the redraft and getting crazy value in Dynasty. But it's a positive. If you got him when you were supposed to draft him in June, you're ecstatic.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think he could be overvalued. I think he'd be so high.
Moving on here to DeAndre Swift. This is a really interesting one. You know, we don't see a ton of work on the ground from DeAndre Swift in week one. We see him start to get involved in the passing game a little bit, and then horror for Lions fans. They're super hyped up rookie pick, drops the game-winning touchdown wide open in the end zone. And I got to tell you, Ryan, as somebody who has watched a lot of DeAndre Swift tape, I was shocked when he dropped that ball because I have seen him run that route many a time and catch the ball. In week two, Detroit did not back off of using him in the passing game. They targeted him another five times. He caught all five receptions. He's caught 8 of 10 targets so far through 2 weeks, 75 yards. And it was the thing that we consistently did not give DeAndre Swift enough credit for was his pass-catching ability. And he's shown to really, you know, have those good hands, but also have that involvement and trust from the coaching staff when it comes to the passing game. That gives us a level of PPR floor that I don't think we ever imagined for DeAndre Swift, or at least, and I'm using we as the totality here, because us at Dynasty Draft, when we definitely picked up on his hands, right? So if he starts getting 10-plus carries a game, and they stop giving Kerryon Johnson the damn ball at the goal line, this is somebody I think you can still buy in on a little bit because his fantasy points, although he's gone above 10 PPR points in the first 2 weeks, they're not flashy yet. Like, I think you can still get in lower than you should on DeAndre Swift right now.
Yeah, I think that drop touchdown saved any chance he had of getting him. Because if he had caught that, people would have lost their mind.
Right, because it would have been the flashy highlight. It would have been the sexy play.
And everybody would have been buying him going crazy next week or last week. But he didn't, and he still looked quietly good. I hate the offense. I hate Matt Patricia's play calling, how he uses running backs. That gives me some worry on his ceiling, which was there before. But that PPR production, in fact, they're going to him in the passing game, is a really good thing. And I feel like everything Patricia does is based off of what Belichick does. And if he's in that James White role, but with his explosive ability, that's really good, man.
That's really good.
Like, you can have a guy who can be a locked RB2 no matter what. He can just plug and play every week and not worry about.
All right, let's switch it up here. Let's move on to the wide receivers, and let's talk about my boy, wide receiver one, C.D. Lamb. I got to tell you, man, I have loved almost everything I've seen out of Lamb so far this season. Week one, we get the Sunday night football game. 5 out of 6 targets brings in 59 yards. The usage was there. You could see the target was there. In a game where Dak's going to throw the ball a lot every week, but you could tell that he was looking for Lamb right off the bat week one, and he got good volume relative to what I think he out-targeted Michael Gallup, if I'm remembering correctly, in that game, or at least equally. And what I liked about Lamb,
We
saw a lot of separation week one. What we didn't see, right, what we did not see was necessarily that he was able to make big plays after the catch, right, because it's not the Big 12. But he's finding other ways to win. He's not relying on what he did well in college to win at the NFL level. So I was excited after week one. Week two, really high volume passing game. He gets 9 targets, goes over 100 yards. So through 2 weeks, Ryan, through 2 weeks, he's caught 11 of 15 targets for 165 yards. The only reason that we are not losing our minds over CeeDee Lamb right now is because he has not been necessarily targeted and or found the end zone. Once that comes, it's going to be it's like, you know, strap a rocket to his back. He's shooting, his value is shooting to the moon. He has proved everything so far that I could have asked for 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's looked so good. And that offense is throwing the ball a ton, which is great for him to keep that volume up. I don't think him to overtake Cooper for that one role, but it's gonna be up there, man. He has that kind of talent. He's ways. They're trusting him later in games. It's all positives there. Give me him all day. If I could get any way to get that dude on my team, I'm doing it right now.
Absolutely. Same situation, man, as DeAndre Swift. He's just a little underpriced for what I think he will be. You know, I think you could still buy in low. You're not going to buy in low. You're not getting him cheap. I'm not suggesting that. But I still think at this point you're getting him lower than what you'll pay for him in 4 weeks, and then certainly what you're going to pay for him next week.
Now, yeah, we're out here. Let's say fantasy community, a lot of people chase touchdowns because that gets you the heavy fantasy points. But a small sample size, that's not what you want to look for. You want to look for that volume there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these guys are getting.
And we're seeing the right things. Like with our eyes, we're seeing the right things, which at the end of the day is going to lead more it's going to lead to more value than chasing the point in the box score, right? Like that's, we need to use our eyes. And sometimes we get a little bit too caught up with the stats. When you're able to separate in the way that Lamb has been able to separate, the red zone targets will come. The touchdowns, they will come.
Yeah, absolutely, man. He's a number one wide receiver. He has that whole skill set. It hasn't changed. He's just popping quicker than we thought.
Here's the guy who was right up there, of course, the whole way through. CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy. CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy. I got to say, you know, watching Jerry Jeudy's games both against Tennessee in week one and then Pittsburgh in week two, there were things that I liked. There were things I saw some drops in there, Ryan. We saw some drops with Jerry Jeudy that we did not see at Alabama. So there's a little bit of hesitation there, but overall, he also has 15 targets through the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the drops. We see a lot of very good receivers have drops and still produce a ton of fantasy. Like, dudes like Mike Evans are catching 60% of the balls thrown their way. So I'm not super worried about it. He's getting wide open. He's roasting guys. And he now is sink or swim because with Courtland Sutton out, we're going to see what he's going to look like right now as a wide receiver one. And I'm all for it. But the flashes are there. The big play potential's there. You have that 152 yards with his – 2 or 3 drops he has, you add that yardage on there, he's up in contention with one of the top receiving leaders in the league right now. Like, he's a talented player. I love 15 targets through 2 weeks.
And if you're looking at players that are going to be impact pieces this year, Courtland Sutton is out for the season. It's going to be Jerry Jeudy. It's going to be Jerry Jeudy and Noah Fant show.
I overpaid for Jeudy in a trade a week ago, and I feel so much better about it.
I bet you feel better right now.
Yeah, I thought I bought him kind of as a long-term investment. Now it's go time.
It's a short-term payoff.
Short-term payoff. So you buy these guys on cheap and something happens, that opportunity is there.
Let's talk about a guy that I expected to be a little bit quicker of a payoff, and that's Justin Jefferson. Just 6 targets through 2 weeks here for the Minnesota Vikings. However, he's caught 5 of his 6 targets. He has 70 yards. He had 44 yards in week 2, Ryan, which was just over a third of the 113 total yards that Kirk Cousins threw. So although the Minnesota offense is in a little bit of trouble, it seems like for what he's getting asked to do, Justin Jefferson is getting the job done. But I got to tell you, I was hoping that we'd see a little bit more involvement in terms of volume quicker for Justin Jefferson, just because it's truly a two wide receiver offense. Now, my folks who are more connected to the Minnesota side of things are telling me not to panic with Justin Jefferson. The volume will come. The targets will come. Is that where you're at with Jefferson?
Yeah, I mean, this team's bad. Kirk Cousins has been absolute just hot garbage. I don't think this offense, this team has any footing in, like, idea where they're at right now. So we want to look for the things, like you said. He's caught 5 to 6 targets. He's been efficient. He's getting open. It's just the ball's not getting there. Just a little patience. It can't. The team can't be that bad the rest of the – maybe. But
they might be.
They might be. They might be that bad. It's shocking. But, like, the signs of that are always good. It could give you a little bit of a bye window because the team's really that bad. There might be some major changes that could make it good in a hurry.
Ryan, somebody that we consistently told folks after we're watching the tape, guys were getting excited about, was Laviska Shenault. And we said, you know, if this guy's able to stay healthy and be on the field, he's going to be a dynamic difference maker. Thus far, he's been healthy. He's been on the field. And he's been finding a variety of ways to be a difference maker, Ryan. Has caught 6 of 8 targets through the first 2 weeks, just over 60 yards and a touchdown there. He's also ran the ball 7 times for 47 yards. This has an exciting level of upside when it comes to Laviska Shenault. He is clearly an important piece of what Jacksonville is trying to do to be creative and to create as much opportunity as possible with that offense.
Has nobody told them they're supposed to be tanking? Like,
nobody's told Gardner.
Nobody's told Gardner, and they're playing smart football. These young guys are stepping up. They're using him in so many ways now. Like that, that's exciting. Like, if you're finding – if a guy's that talented in his first few games of his career, you're creating touches for him and just finding ways to get him involved, that's a very positive sign. He's stepping up. He's gotten more volume and attention than DJ Shark has, who we've all – everybody loved this year. Like, he's a good piece of that offense, and – Gardner's looking like he doesn't want that job taken quickly, which means another year with them if that happens. Like, I kind of like what I'm seeing there.
I love what I'm seeing. I love what I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's very good. He's going to be something to make me very happy.
Chase Claypool is a name that has popped out here over the first couple weeks. He has caught all 5 of his targets through 2 weeks. 127 yards. He has that big touchdown run. Now, Ryan, I might be wandering into hater territory here, but at least on 2 of those catches, I feel like he should have had offensive pass interference. It's like he's the new DeAndre Hopkins, except I think he's a little bit more obvious with the way that he pushes off of guys. I don't know. Like I said, I might be wandering into hater territory. I never bought it with Chase Claypool. I'm still not buying it. I don't know. Am I just being a hater on this?
No, I think it's something like we saw what we saw on him, and he's doing a little bit better than we thought. His thing, when he first came, is kind of his role that we were not sure of for the Steelers. And it kind of reminds me of how they use Martavius Bryant. Like that big body, fast receiver who's not – there, that's not very versatile, but they'll take some shots too. Pushing off. I mean, it's the NFL. There's stuff every play. There's hand play, pushing, shopping, whatever. I'm fine with that. I'm not going to buy into your hate on that, even though, you know, hate the Steelers. But there's upside. I think he's going to be a super boomer bust player, which has its role in fantasy. But I think it's better than what I originally thought of it. Like, I think he has more boom potential in some weeks than before.
Yeah.
But there's definitely going to be games he disappears.
Right. It's going to be a hard guy to rely on week in and week out. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, I mean, he's in an offense that's going to try to push the ball downfield as much as possible. I don't think Ben's arm is what it has been. And so they're going to need to use all of their weapons. He's going to be involved. I just don't know if he's a guy you can plug into your lineup with confidence every single week.
No. Not at all. Even down that, your best case scenario is he produces the way we see, like, Brandon Cooks, when he does it when you can't bench him. But I don't think he's going to be there.
All right, Ryan, last guy here we're going to talk about, Jalen Reagor. An interesting situation here when it comes to Jalen Reagor. I mean, week one against Washington, he catches one of four targets, 55 yards. It was this just one big deep pass, a nice teardrop, you know, right in the bucket with Carson Wentz. Reagor pulls it in. Week two, he goes 4 for 4 with his targets, 41 yards. And so he ends up catching three more balls, but pulling in 14 less yards. It's really interesting the way that they've chosen to use him over the first 2 weeks. Now, for me, you know, you see that upside, you see that flash of potential that everyone was excited about with Jalen Reagor. We've also seen the things that have been concerns. You know, week one, Carson Wentz throws an interception. At first look, a lot of people put it on Carson Wentz. If you go back and look at that route, Jalen Reagor, I think, lets that corner body him, lets that corner jump the route without any resistance, and it leads to an interception. In week two, it won't show up in the box score because it ended up getting called, I think, for like a targeting hit or whatever. But Jalen Reagor ends up dropping a ball in the red zone, like right at the goal line there. And like I said, the penalty ends up erasing it from the box score, but he did have that drop right at the goal line. So some of the same concerns that I had from coming out had been present. I don't know. Have you been more encouraged by his first 2 weeks against Washington and then the Rams?
You said you're worried about being a hater against Chase Claypool. But I see what I see. But the thing is, isn't that kind of what we expected out of Reagor? Whether you're higher or lower, like,
yeah,
we knew there was some boom or bust to him. We know he's a guy who you might have to manufacture touches with. He's involved, and I don't know if his offense has a game plan right now, other than their offensive line has just deteriorated, and Carson's is just running for his life and just slinging it up there. So I don't know what we're seeing yet. I think there's positives. I don't think I'm trusting him this year, but I still feel him as a good player in the future in that offense. Like I said, they're trying to get the ball. They don't have receiving options other than their tight ends and Miles Sanders. It's there for him for the taking. He has the opportunity to try to prove it this year if that offense can get his head out of his ass.
Ryan, this was a fun episode, man, checking in on these rookies. We obviously will be talking about these guys throughout the entire season, but with 2 weeks of kind of suggestion of how they may be used throughout the season, we could not resist the opportunity to circle back on these guys that we spent so much time leading up to and through the draft process, really digging into. So hopefully that gave a little bit of insight about, you know, if you have these guys on your team, how you should feel about them, if you need to go out and get some pieces for the future, some of the guys that may be more worthwhile, maybe more valuable to go ahead and get now. Make sure to go ahead and subscribe if you have not already. Please go ahead, share the podcast with a friend. Spread the good word when it comes to the Dynasty Fantasy Football coverage that we're providing on top of the Devy Fantasy Football and NFL Draft coverage. We will be back heading into week three, helping you out on Twitter as well throughout the weekend. At Foss534 is where you can find Ryan on Twitter. I'm at the @FF_educator. Ryan, I'm ready to get some week three dubs. How about you?
Dude, always about to get them dubs. It's that Monday night one that I'm worried about, though.
Kansas City, Baltimore?
Yes, sir.
I'm ready for it, dude. We're gonna get some.
I'll take the whole day off.
We're gonna get the Monday night football dub, and we're gonna get some week three dubs as well. Yes, thanks, sir, for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dynasty Draft Room Podcast. Please make sure to go ahead and subscribe. Leave us a